welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everyone, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I am your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, October 17th. We are live once again from AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, broadcasting around the country to our affiliate stations courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network. And, of course, you can catch us, as always, on the Internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org. LibertyNewsRadio.com, and as well as that, in addition to that, I should say, our satellite frequency as well, and the Liberty News Wire. So many ways to listen, so many ways to be entertained every time you tune into this program, and informed as well, we hope. And we've got a dynamite program, lots of good guests, lots of good topics this evening, and to help me sift through those good guests and topics, at least for the first hour, my compatriot and colleague, Keith Alexander. Keith, how are you?
Hey, James, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. It's October, you know. The weather's great. We're saddling up for another ride through the cesspool, and got a big birthday coming up next week. We'll be 5 years old. We mentioned that last week, so it's a celebratory and festive mood in the swamp this evening.
Yeah, I'm chomping at the bits for tonight. I tell you, the news media just serves up one banquet after another for us here, don't they?
You know, we're never gonna starve. There's never gonna be a lack of interesting topics to provide our commentary on, as long as we've got the so-called establishment media providing us with such content. And tonight, well, let me first say who's coming up this evening, and then we're gonna dive into some just absolutely salacious topics that this first hour is gonna be chock full, ladies and gentlemen. You're gonna want to sit down and hold on for the ride. All through the show, for that matter. Coming up at the end of the program, a couple of hours from now, we're going to have Carlton Huffman. Of course, he is a frequent guest on this program. He is a former staff member for Pat Buchanan's American Cause organization, was Pat's right-hand man in that organization, and he's going to be on to provide us with some encouraging news of a victory won there in the suburban D.C. area. So more on that coming up a little later on in the night. We're also going to hear from chapter leaders of the Council of Conservative Citizens, Brian Pace out of northern Mississippi, and Sid Secular from Washington, D.C., the CFCC, one of the greatest organizations out there providing results and fruit for our people. They've got some very encouraging news from a couple of different parts of the country, so we're going to learn about that. But our featured guest for this evening, Alex Kurtajic, he is the author of the new book, a novel, it is, Mister. And as we said on the blog, we're really excited about this book, not only because it's a great read, an enthralling read, but because I am now officially a literary figure. And I'm not just talking about the blog that we have at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'm talking about this new novel, Mister, which was recently reviewed by Edmund Connolly, another cesspool guest, for the Occidental Quarterly. Mister is a novel about the future, and I'm in it as the governor of Tennessee, and we think you should check it out. Go to our website there under the forthcoming guest section. You'll see a live link that'll take you over to Mr. Connolly's review of this book and also provide you with ordering information. So all of that and more tonight in just 3 short hours. Keith, I don't know how we're going to fit it all in.
We're going to give it our best shot.
Well, and with that being said, let's waste no other time setting the table for tonight, folks. It's a banquet prepared for you, as Keith said. Let's get those knives and forks in hand and dig in. First thing, I think the most interesting story of the week is Rush Limbaugh's failed bid to be part of a group attempting to buy the St. Louis Rams. And I got to tell you, Keith, they disqualified him because he is allegedly a racist now. And I have no sympathy for Rush on this one, not one bit whatsoever. I think it is good that he is getting a taste of political correctness the way we have been force-fed it for so long for providing leadership on this program. Rush is a guy who I wouldn't quite put him in the same neoconservative category as perhaps a Bill Kristol, but I think if you're being very level-headed, you would say that Rush is a marginalized conservative, a very moderate conservative, if you have to use such terms to identify him as. And listen, I'm excited. I'm excited that he has to feel this. It just goes to show that appeasement never works, and trying to lay it down the line or try to lay it down the middle, as he always does when it comes to the most important issues, isn't going to save him from the same savaging that true leaders
No, he's going to the same gulag as the rest of us, unfortunately. You know, that's the lesson to be learned from this whole episode, that if you are 1 degree to the right of center in the eyes of the arbiters of political correctness in America today, you're going to be punished, and you're going to be punished, you know, in a very public way, in a humiliating way, and you're going to be drugged through the mud, which is what's happened to Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, we're going to break this down in a way that other news outlets haven't done it. We're going to take you right to the very source of why it happened, how it happened, and what the fallout will be. So let's get started on that.
Yeah, and with that being said, let's just get right to it, because I have been, as you said, Keith, just rabid to tear into this all week as it continued to mount and the speculation continued to build that he would be dropped, and eventually, of course, he was. First of all, I think it goes without saying that had Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton been part of a group to buy an NFL team, despite their comments being far more controversial, far more racial, if you will, and I have no problem talking candidly about race, that's what this program does, but certainly far more anti-American than any comment Rush has ever made, it would be a non-issue. It would just be more great diversity and freedom of speech.
No, they would be welcomed in.
Yes, sir, they would be welcomed in. But what Rush has said has been, I think, very mild. I mean, he pointed out an obvious fact that the media salivates to see black quarterbacks succeed, and that was the big, obviously controversial statement that got him canned from ESPN a few years back, as he was referencing Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb. Absolutely apparent statement that he issued there, and he has had apparently some other statements that they're,
most of them are sham statements.
But all very, very, in my opinion, non-controversial.
Yeah, and most of them have been disproven, too. Basically, this guy is about as weak as grandma's iced tea when it comes to issues of race and ethnicity. And that's why it's so important that this event happened, because this shows several things. First of all, it shows the overwhelming liberal bent of the sports writing and sports commentating community. And, of course, we pointed this out numerous times in the past. Who populates that group of people, sports commentators and writers? Jewish people, far predominant. You know, they're what, 2.2 to 2.5% of the population of the United States. But turn on ESPN tonight. I dare anybody to do that. And look at who is reporting. Chris Berman, Tony Kornheiser, Rich Eisen, Linda Cohn, Rachel Nichols, Steve Levy, Rich Eisen. Now, what do all these people have in common? They're Jewish. And furthermore, why is that important? Well, it's important for one simple reason. Jewish people are the most liberal segment of the American white population. And as a result, when you populate any type of institution or entity with liberals, why are you surprised when you get some type of far leftist reaction and some far leftist ethos that governs the entire of sports commentary, which is what's happened? This is why these people jumped on Rush Limbaugh for his Donovan McNabb comments.
Well, and again, what Rush Limbaugh has done, or what Rush Limbaugh has said, keep in mind, this is a very, for lack of a better term, mainstream commentator. He is certainly not controversial in the true sense of the word. If he was controversial, he would be telling the truth more often than he does. He would be more than just a Republican cheerleader. But the NFL came out very strong against Limbaugh before it was dropped from the ownership bid. The NFL commissioner came out against him. So did the owner of the Indianapolis Colts. They said they didn't want such controversial figures in the league yet. This is a league who welcomes back with open arms criminals like Michael Vick. The coach of the Los Angeles Raiders is in some sort of a, you know, harassment or, excuse me, assault, under assault charges right now for beating up another coach or a player on this team. You know, what Rush Limbaugh has done really pales in comparison to the average NFL member.
Well, see, what it shows you is that it is better to electrocute dogs in the eyes of the arbiters of good taste with the NFL like Michael Vick did than it is to say something that is mildly critical of any member of the black race, like Donovan McNabb. But, you know, while we're at it, while we're talking about the NFL's obvious, you know, preference for black quarterbacks and their obvious cheerleading that they succeed, what about the total lack of black running backs, black cornerbacks, black defensive players, whites are quarterbacks, coaches, and kickers?
Answer that question with the continue. Stay tight, everyone.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you in the Political Cesspool this Saturday evening, October 17th. We've got a special offer for everyone out there, and it begins right now, and this offer will continue to be on the table for you through the end of our program next week, which is going to be our big birthday celebration program. This show began on October 26th, 2004. So next week, since we won't be on the air this October 26th, it's not a Saturday, next week we're going to have our annual on-air birthday party. And beginning now and continuing through the end of next week's program, we have a booklet available for you that the program is promoting. It is entitled Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society. It's a great gift. It's a great piece of reading material. We are offering it to donors who contribute $25 or more to the program between now and next week. And it will be autographed by each member of the Political Cesspool hosting staff, myself, Keith Alexander, Winston Smith, Eddie Miller, and Bill Rowland. So great gifts for you as a token of our appreciation for anyone who donates between now and next week's big birthday bash. We're talking about the Rush Limbaugh fiasco right now. As I said earlier in the show, I have no sympathy for this man at all. I consider Limbaugh to be a weakling, a con artist, perhaps, that pretends to be on our side, but in reality cares only about one thing, which is getting even more rich than he already is. As we wrote on the blog this week, there are tens of millions of angry European Americans out there, and Russia's job is to make sure the money continues to roll in by keeping them essentially on the sidelines, riled up, without ever offering any real solutions or even hitting at the root of the real problems facing this country. I think he's nothing but a cheerleader for the GOP. I'm not crying any crocodile tears for the fact that he has been dropped from this bid to buy the St. Louis Rams. Listen, this is what's good for the goose is good for the gander, baby. He needs to suffer it. And Keith, I hope this will make him be a little more outspoken on the real issues. Do you think he will, or do you think he'll just continue to toe the line?
Well, I have some hope for Rush Limbaugh, and because this whole episode points out another important aspect of American life today that isn't touched on, and that's the fissure very often, and that's the fissure between red state and blue state America. It's not a fissure anymore. It's like the Grand Canyon. In blue state America, apparently comments like Rush Limbaugh's strike at least a fair number of people as being beyond the pale. Everybody in red state America, on the other hand, is scratching their heads and saying, like the old Wendy's commercial, where's the beef? You know, what in the world has happened here? So consequently, I hope that Rush Limbaugh draws from this that being a good red state American in good standing is the thing to be, and that no amount of appeasement, no amount of apology is going to gain you anything. Our arbiters of taste, our new Emily Post for American public behavior, are now Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, if you can believe it, folks. That's what this shows.
Well, and there's one more thing I want to say about it is this. So you just to show the rank hypocrisy of what we all have to deal with. One of the quotes they used to get Rush apparently ousted, he was tried and convicted in the court of the mainstream press. And they said, Rush said this. Quote, look, let me put it to you this way. The NFL all too often looks like a game between the Bloods and the Crips, except without any weapons. There, I said it. Now, according to his critics, Keith, this was a quote. This quote alone was enough to demonstrate that Rush was a stone cold racist and unfit to have anything to do with the league, let alone be part of the team. But it was the NFL itself, who began analyzing videotape because they noticed, as everyone else did, that the players were in fact flashing, you know, gang symbols after they, you know, scored a touchdown or a field goal or whatever. But you know, Rush points it out. It's used to discredit him. The NFL, you know, actually puts in its policy to ban this stuff, and it's
well, see, what it shows, James, is this. It's not what you say, it's who says it. Just like your situation with CNN with Roland Martin when you said that you dared him to walk the mean streets of Memphis when you were on with Paul Azan, and he said, that's terrible. Well, now the Memphis Communist Appeal, the Memphis Commercial Appeal, has an article about the war zone of Memphis and how dangerous it is and how this poor woman that lives in an apartment has had bullets flying through the walls of her apartment. So, you know, again, you say it as a conservative, you're pilloried, some left-winger says it, and it's perfectly all right.
I think that's political correctness in action. Whoever said it had to make sense. We do need to move on from the Rush Limbaugh thing. We have a lot more to cover during the first hour. But joining us now on the line is another fellow Cesspool co-host, Winston Smith. Now, Winston was scheduled to come on during the second hour and stay with me to the end of the program, but he got so riled up during our first segment here, he had to opine. Winston, how you doing, buddy?
Winston, you there?
Can you read me?
Yes.
All right. You got some comments on the Rush Limbaugh thing, by all means.
Well, hello, James, and hello to you, Keith. It's always a great thing to hear Keith Alexander on a political cesspool, but I don't want to take up too much time with pleasantries. I did want to make a quick comment on this and this issue. And, James, I will disagree with you a little bit. And, Keith, I will agree with you a lot of bit on one of your points. But the lesson of all this is that it is a lesson. These people did this to Rush Limbaugh for one reason and one reason only, and that was to prove that they could do it. And they did it as a lesson to everyone else, that if they can take Rush Limbaugh out of this venture, they can pretty much do it to anybody. And I normally don't agree with people who say things like, well, this isn't just about me, it's about all Americans. But in this case, I think there's some truth to that. The idea behind all this was to prove to all white America that if you do not toe the politically correct line, that if you don't give total acquiescence to political correctness, they are going to deprive you of your means of making an income. And Keith, I agree with you that this points out the chasm, the absolute chasm between red state America and blue state America. It is unbridgeable. If there ever was a proof for the absolute necessity of secession or something like it, this is it, because you cannot disagree with political correctness. You cannot disagree with the left without suffering terribly for it. And if they can take this thing away from Rush Limbaugh, which to him is a very minor thing, he's not gonna suffer financially from it. Imagine what they can do to Joe Average, who just wants to make sure that he has a job with which to support his family. Imagine what they will do to him who does not have a building full of lawyers to take care of him in this way.
Let me say this, James. Just like Evel Knievel couldn't jump over Grand Canyon, even Rush Limbaugh, with all of his wealth, can't jump over this gulf between red state and blue state America. And as usual, Winston, when Winston hits the nail on the head, he drives it straight. He's right on point with this.
Yes, he does do that. But I will say this. I'll let this be my final word on Limbaugh. I don't think much of him for obvious reasons. I think he has the power to really turn the rudder almost by himself. And he's using his power to do nothing more than mild cheerleading for the GOP. Although I will say he has more salvageable qualities than a Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly. We'll see how he plays this. And it could be something, whether you like him or hate him, you got to admit he's one of the biggest names in American politics, bar none. There's no doubt about that. He has 100 million plus listeners. Let's see what he does with this. Let's see if he just did this as a publicity stunt, knowing in advance he wouldn't be allowed, or if he was really sincere in his quest to buy this team, and he let's see if he takes this lying down. It's going to be very interesting, and he could really shake a big stick, and if his ditto heads are actually put into action for the right reasons, this could be very interesting. We'll see.
He's just 100 miles up the river from us, James. I
don't know what more
holding
out about than that, although I do give a guilty pleasure of seeing a guy who tried so hard to be part of the establishment getting the same licks that the true leaders of
conservative
or constitutionalist cause.
Don't go away, the political cesspool guys. We'll be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, welcome back to the show, and for all of you Winston Smith fans, and I know there's a lot of you, he'll be back in about 30 minutes as he will be sitting in with me for the second and third hour tonight. Keith Alexander and I still have a few more topics to cover before then. We have a slew of guests forthcoming, among them being Brian Pace, a chapter leader of the Council of Conservative Citizens, very interesting activism that they're doing there in Mississippi. Carlton Huffman, former right-hand man of Pat Buchanan at Pat's American Cause organization. He'll be rounding out the lineup, batting cleanup this evening before we go off air. And our featured guest for the night, Alex Kurtajic, the author of the new novel, Mister. And you can find a link to Mister at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, right underneath the forthcoming guest section on our homepage. Keep in mind, we are offering a very special incentive just for the next week only, ending next Saturday at the conclusion of our program. Between now and then, if you donate $25 or more to the program online, we will give you an autographed copy of the new booklet we're promoting, Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society. It will be signed by all five members of the regular TPC hosting staff. We've talked a lot about Rush Limbaugh. We're going to move on from that. But if you want to read more commentary about Rush, we have put in a bunch of blog entries on this subject at our website. Check it out, read, and enjoy. Keith, segueing from Rush on to other matters, most specifically being how the media shapes public perception, how they are able to create news or absolutely make real news disappear, depending on their persuasion. It's really a very, very powerful weapon that our enemies have. And one prime case in point that I have noticed this week and that you have noticed as well, I picked up a copy of the USA Today earlier this week, and I noticed on the front page they had a huge article just absolutely blowing out of proportion the fact that apparently a small number of homosexual activists took to the streets in Washington, D.C., demanding equality, demanding their civil rights not be infringed. Now, this was one rally that was attended by, I'll give them their credit, a couple of thousand homosexual activists.
And their friends.
Now, the media had you believe that this was one of the biggest stories in the world this week, the fact that these sodomites went to Washington and hooped and hollered. Now, compare and contrast that. This is getting major play on the networks. USA Today, front page.
CBS, ABC, NBC,
the
CNN.
Associated Press, you know, took it to local papers across the country. Huge story, or so we're told. Now, this is one rally, a few thousand people. Compare and contrast that, if you will, with the success of the Tea Parties. The Tea Parties had hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of red state constitutionalists gathering in cities from coast to coast, including Washington, D.C., where their numbers were infinitely larger than the homosexuals this week, and not a peep in any of the mainstream papers other than a couple here and there. It certainly didn't make the AP wires. You heard very little of it on the national news, even though they, in terms of numbers, were outed the homosexuals millions to a few thousand, and that's a very rough, but I think conservative estimate. So, Keith, your thoughts on this and how the media continues to live by the old slogan, perception is the ultimate reality.
Well, you know, we have a article on it or a chapter on it in this pamphlet that we have, or this monograph, Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society. And basically, the left has taken over both the print media and the broadcast media almost from its inception. They got the print media by buying, having syndicates buy up local papers in red state America. And they do it so they can control the minds of people and control what is news and what isn't. This is a perfect example. You know, it doesn't matter how many thousands or millions of people gather for a conservative cause. When it comes to the newspaper the next day or to the 6 o'clock news, the silence is deafening. And meanwhile, a favored group like homosexuals, you know, you talk about the world turned upside down. Now, homosexuals are a favored group by the establishment of America. They gather together a couple of thousand in Washington, D.C., and it's a banner headline in newspapers all over America. It's incredible. You know, the truth is stranger than fiction.
Well, it is, and I guess we could elaborate further, but people understand where we're trying to lead them with this segment. It's just amazing, and unfortunately, the media will continue to do this until we shut them down, and the only way to shut them down is what, Keith? What do liberals hate to hear most?
The sound of a closing purse. That's what we need to do with the NFL and with broadcast news and with your daily newspaper. Just say no. Don't buy it. Don't watch it. Don't patronize it. Don't buy NFL licensed equipment. Let these people know that there is a price to be paid for, you know, giving us a wet mitten across the face continually and refusing to allow conservatives equal rights and equal justice.
Well, I could have said it better myself, and that is how we can fight back. Unfortunately, we don't have any issue advocacy groups that are really out there on the front lines as an explicitly European-American organization, as a pro-white organization, and we need more of that. We need to rally. We need to coalesce. We need to come together as a united force. And then we will have some buying power and major impacts. But the least we can do is do the obvious, and that's not buy these local papers. Yes, I did read the USA Today, but I had walked into a restaurant and they had it, a copy of it laying on the table there. So, but this is something. That's why the political cesspool, I think, plays such an important role. We are gaining steam in a big way. We are very mainstream. You look at the publications and the networks that have covered our work, for better or for worse, in terms of their coverage. We are a proven commodity, and I think a true bona fide leader. We've stood the test of time. We've taken our licks. We continue to fight without retreat, surrender, or apology. We need more organizations out there, be it print, television, radio, speaking up, and not. Not acquiescing or falling on our sword at the first sound of gunfire. We can make our own media, and we can have, listen, who buys these newspapers anyway? Red State Americans. Who reads? You know, our people read. We're the only people who buy this stuff. We buy it. It's almost a form of masochism, I think, Keith, the fact that we would continue to buy these things knowing that everything that we read is going to give us an ulcer, knowing that everything we read is going to be something that we disagree with. We can do more. And we're giving ourselves credit for. There's still, 70% of this country is still European-American? We can do whatever we want to do if we just flex our muscles.
60 and 70%, and we're certainly not 60 to 70% of the NFL. We're certainly not 60 to 70% of the broadcast sports commentators or news commentators or anything else. So consequently, we need to have the same type of consciousness and the same type of lobbying efforts that every other ethnic and racial group does in America. And quite frankly, if they're not going to give us our fair share, we need to do what other groups have done and boycott.
Listen, if everybody that attended a Tea Party rally this year, and I'm saying, I would say close to a million, if not more, if every one of them would get on the same page with regard to their buying power and boycott power and work together and pull in the same direction, my God, we'd shut them down. It'd be done. We could take this country back for the constitutionalist message. We could reclaim the republic. There'd be nothing we couldn't do. But unfortunately, we're like those fish that get caught in the net. If they all pulled in the same direction, they would shred the net. But unfortunately, they all go in a thousand different directions. The fisherman pulls them up, and they're dead. That's us. We're those stupid fish right now, unfortunately.
I think you're right.
We need leadership. And the leadership's coming, folks. We're one of them. But, Keith, speaking of the media and speaking of things we've seen in the paper this week, Leadership Memphis, read it in the commercial appeal. What did Leadership Memphis do this week, Keith?
Well, Leadership Memphis is a group. You tell them what they did, and then I'll tell them about Leadership Memphis.
Okay. Well, Leadership Memphis, I'll let Keith elaborate on who they are after this, but essentially what they did was they brought a group of scholars from Europe, young academics, all white, of course, to Memphis so that they could learn more about the so-called civil rights struggle, so that they could tour the National Civil Rights Museum. And then after doing so, they could have a roundtable discussion about race relations and civil liberties. Keith, what happens at these roundtable discussions sponsored by groups like Leadership Memphis?
Well, they're basically jam sessions where they talk about how awful red state Americans are, particularly Southern whites, which are kind of the quintessential red state Americans. And they have plenty of black slums they can take them to, even in spite of the Acorn-inspired Community Investment Act, which basically almost brought down our entire economy in the past year, that in an effort to give middle-class housing to underclass and black and Hispanic people. But what they do, they're busily trying to scrape the scab off the wound and to use it as a rationale to inflict more and more guilt upon white people and get more and more government money and charity money directed towards minorities.
All right, so they bring these people in from Europe, these bright, shining stars. They let them know how bad the white population of America is. And then they take these ideas back to Europe and, I guess, what, transplant them?
And next thing you know, the Nobel Prize goes to Barack Obama.
We'll be back right after this. They
took the home. Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
I always think of Die Hard with a Vengeance when I hear that particular bump. That is the When Johnny Comes Marching Home theme, as used in the epic movie Die Hard 3 with Bruce Willis and Jeremy Irons. It's all right. I actually watched that movie not too long ago, but of course it came out in the mid 90s and I saw it then as well. By the way, if you notice that I sound a little bit clearer, it's because we're back on the ISDN line here at 1380 Studios. WLRM, the digital line is back up. We had our engineer working on it for the first couple of segments and I was on another line, but now I should be a little more crisp. My audio quality little bit better. We had a fast and furious first hour thus far. A lot more forthcoming before the sand runs out of the hourglass this evening, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a handful of great guests. Political Cesspool co-host Winston Smith will be joining me during the second hour, taking the chair of Keith Alexander, who will be scurrying off after this segment. But before Keith leaves, we still have a few more things to discuss with him. We were talking about Leadership Memphis in the last hour, and the reason I brought that up is because it just goes to elaborate the point once again, accentuate the point that the left has countless, you could never count all of the organizations or media entities that do the bidding of the left. And when you think about right-leaning organizations, you know, I think truly there are maybe a handful of true, tried and true right-leaning organizations that are standing up for red state Americans, constitutionalists, white Americans. Obviously, this radio program is one, but I certainly don't count Fox News Channel as one. That's a neoconservative outfit at best.
Only conservative.
There to promote the Republican Party, which is, of course, just a different wing of the same vulture. The other wing being the Democratic Party. No matter who wins in those races between Republicans and Democrats, we typically lose. There are a few exceptions, but not many. Sean Hannity is not a voice for conservatism. Rush Limbaugh, not much. Bill O'Reilly, not at all. So, I mean, folks, 70 million white Americans, they have very few very few resources. Liberty News Radio, I think, is one of them. And I'm talking about, you know, for the constitutionalist crew, this radio program. There are a few others. We'll be talking with one of the organizations, Brian Pace of the Council of Conservative Citizens. But before we get into the second and third hour, Keith, obviously we got to wrap up the first. And you had a few thoughts stemming from what we brought up before that last commercial break.
Well, you were talking about Leadership Memphis, and the point we're making is that they're not satisfied to restrict their efforts to brainwashing and propagandizing the youth of Memphis and the youth of America. You know, they have these things like Leadership Memphis everywhere. They have Leadership Cucamonga, Leadership Detroit, Leadership Denver, things like this all over the place, okay? And they're intended to kind of make sure that everybody that looks like a new coming mover and shaker is going to be a liberal, and if they're a conservative, they can be identified, outed, and marginalized. And they're not satisfied just to do that in America. Now they want to make sure they brainwash and propagandize Europeans as well. And, of course, they've done an excellent job of that, as shown by Barack Obama's recently winning the Nobel Peace Prize for virtually nothing. And when I was thinking about that last week, it started to cause me to say, you know, this is nothing new. Look, Jimmy Carter got it. Nelson Mandela got it. And when
Nelson
I thought about
Mandela.
Nelson Mandela, I thought about the fact that this man is a terrorist, or was a terrorist. He bombed a train station that killed 16 people. And then I compared him to somebody like Bobby Frank Cherry, who was one of the bombers of the Birmingham church back in 1964, where four little black girls were killed. And, of course, that's reprehensible. But just consider this. 16 people killed versus four. The 16-person killer is lionized worldwide as a freedom fighter and rewarded with the Nobel Peace Prize. Then Menachem Begin of Israel, who was the head of the Irgun, a terrorist group of revolutionaries that bombed the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 1948, killing 91 people. Again, he's a freedom fighter. He is the head of his country. He goes to bed in clean sheets every night, wearing a suit and tie, living the high life, just like Nelson Mandela. But, you know, look at it. 4 versus 16 versus 91. What's wrong with this picture? I'm not at all excusing what Bobby Frank Cherry did, and I certainly don't want to see any conservatives or people on the political right drawn into violence. That would be horrendous. In fact, that's just what the left wants. But on the other hand, just think of this. These people, Mandela and Begin, are terrorists who have a body count that is absolutely staggering, and they're rewarded. And, you know, are we living in an inverted world, or a crazy world, or what?
Well, here's the question, Keith. I think the million-dollar question. What was the difference? Why were they able to become – why were they able to receive status of distinction, whereas the bomber in Birmingham was treated to his right justice?
Well, he was hounded. He had about 4 or 5 trials. They finally got him in jail so he could spend the last 6 months of his life in jail. They hounded him relentlessly, almost like he's some Nazi war criminal. Meanwhile, Begin and Mandela are rewarded and become the heads of state in their respective nations. Now, you know, obviously if you want to move the world, if you're trying to move things in a left-wing direction, then you're a hero and a freedom fighter. And if you try to preserve the status quo or move things to the right, then you're a no-count bum and the absolute scum of the earth, and you deserve to be hounded to your very grave.
Well, and I think this goes to prove another point that we make time and time again. It seems as though the powers that be, the ruling elite, the oligarchy, if you will, can absolutely and arbitrarily pick and choose which laws they're going to enforce based upon the political preferences of the assailant or the alleged criminal.
Yeah, you would think that they would all suffer the same fate, wouldn't you, if law was indeed
blind, law's broken and you're tried and convicted, you should pay an equal price, regardless of anything.
Right, exactly.
But that's certainly not the case, and it never is the case. I mean, we have a federal government now. that picks and chooses which laws it's going to enforce. Try not paying your taxes and see what happens. But being a legal alien and commit a felony by coming over here without going through the proper channels, and not only is the law not enforced, but you're entitled to welfare benefits and everything else, the things that tax-paying citizens can't get. Where's the justice in that?
Well, look at Joe Arpaio, the sheriff in Maricopa County, Arizona. He, as a law enforcement officer, as the sheriff of his county, tries to enforce the laws against illegal immigration, and rather than being rewarded or congratulated or even left alone, Janet Napolitano is up here threatening him with prosecution for trying to enforce laws that are on the books.
Yeah, what does Sheriff Joe do? He did his job. He's doing his job. He's doing the job that no other sheriff, certainly not Shelby County Sheriff, the weakling Mark Luttrell, he's enforcing the law. And Sheriff Joe is made into some sort of a, a bigot. What is the media calling him these days, you know, for enforcing the law, for trying to protect the citizens from this illegal alien invasion down there in Maricopa County, Arizona?
Well, he's apparently consummate evil because he wants to stand up for the laws of the United States and the current citizens of the United States and does not want to see them burdened and weighted down by third world hordes coming over the Arizona border from Mexico.
Every sheriff in the country should be acting exactly as Joe Arpaio is doing. Every red-blooded constitutionalist in this country should be speaking out in the way that I speak out and the way Keith speaks out and Winston Smith, Eddie Miller, and Bill Rowland. We're not paid professionals at this. We didn't have any broadcast training before our first night on the radio. This is something we do. It's something we love. It's something that we feel obligated to do as sort of a down payment on the debt we owe our ancestors for carving this country from a wilderness and paying the price of blood and bone. You don't have to have any sort of degree or pedigree in political activism to go out there and make a difference. But yet, so few are willing to do it in this day and age, Keith. And the few that are, there are so few of us doing it that it's so easy to sniper them down like they're doing Sheriff Joe. And it's a travesty. It's a tragedy.
Well, it's obviously a world in which the rules are heads I win, tails you lose. And we know which side they've designated to be the losing side.
Well, I mean, and it goes right to the one of the biggest political items up in Washington right now, the health care, so-called health care reform bill. What's the percentage of Americans that don't want it? Staggering. Yet here they are ramrodding it through. And you know why they do it? Because they know we're the fish in the net. We're not going to pull in the same direction after they stiff us on this. And they'll get reelected. The incumbents will always get reelected because we have short attention spans and we're too enamored in the culture of bread and circus. Well, there's a lot of other reasons to it, but
well,
we only have 20 seconds
till
break.
Terms, James, think of it this way. What irony. You
Ten
had
seconds,
this
Keith.
Counterculture of the 60s that came in and they said we weren't free enough. And now that they're in charge, they're even more totalitarian, much more totalitarian than the establishment that they complained about. The left-wing establishment that runs America today is totalitarian to the max.
To go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting,
hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.